Vroom, vroom, vroom. Where the fuck are you going?
Go home.
Get in your house. Hello and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. I'm Nicole Sweeney.
My name is Marines.
And today we're joined by no one because this is our 2020 in review episode. We haven't been in your feeds for a lot of months. However, since we started this podcast, we have been doing this thing where at the end of the year, we get together and we talk about all the stuff that we read and watched and, you know, all the media things that we did this year, our favorites and our least favorites and all the things that we didn't discuss on the podcast. And in years past, we would get to the end and be like, I don't know, there's like five things that I maybe consumed that weren't for the podcast. But since we released 9 episodes this year, it turns out that most of the things, it's the other way around. Most of the things that I read and watched were not covered on the podcast. Although I was putting together a list and there are a bunch of things that we were like, oh yeah, we could do an episode on that. But then like, who had the will?
No episode happened.
So obviously this episode is going to be a little bit different than the other ones because of what this year was. In trying to put together a list of like things for this episode, like when we decided that we were going to do this, like I wanted to do it, but also my brain could not conceptualize what this would even be like, what I don't remember things.
Yes.
My memory is now non-existent. So part of how I prepared for this, I have this Google Doc that is just a list of stuff that I looked up, what did Netflix release in 2020? And so I like went through the list of Netflix releases and anything that I watched, I added it to my list, and did that for like, you know, a couple other things too. And there are a few things on there that I was genuinely shocked to discover. I was like, that they were part of this year, including the 9 things that we made episodes about. The Witcher, Birds of Prey, Motherland. Do you remember Motherland? I forgot that happened. But that's the last episode.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
I think that's like part of it is that we weren't doing this thing. So we weren't talking about the media that we were consuming, but also how I was consuming media this year was different. Why I was consuming media was different. And a lot of that is just stuff that, I mean, we're going to mention here and I guess give some feelings on, but a lot of it is just stuff that I binged it. I didn't think too much about it while I was watching it. And to like be able to dredge up thoughts about it now, like maybe I'll try, but that's kind of where I am with it. So as kind of like a broad starting point, I'm curious if there was any kind of media that you found yourself like turning towards, you know, was there, I don't know, what was your comfort media during this time? What were you escaping into?
I feel like I had a couple different sort of like thematic groupings, you know, like there were phases of different things that I was sliding into. I want to say it was like August or September maybe, where I had considered doing a rewatch of The Americans, but instead I was like, you know what, no, I've watched that show all the way through twice, and so I suddenly decided that I would watch Alias, which I had never seen before. So I watched all, I think, 5 seasons of Alias in the span of like a week and a half. And these are like long network TV seasons. And then when Alias finished, I was like, no, I'm not done yet. And so I then rewatched all of Chuck. That is a show that I watched as it was airing, but I quit before the very the finale of the second to last season. I was like, nah, fuck this. and I quit. I never watched the final season. So I like went through all of that. And then after that, I was like looking for spy books, which I like put on hold on the library. I actually just finished fairly recently, American Spy by Lauren Wilkinson, but I put it on hold at the library during this during this like chunk of time where I was like, yeah, spies. Why? I have no idea. Like, I do not know. Watching Alias in 2020 was a super fascinating experience because of all of the I don't know, just like early 2000s-ness of it. There were so many little things about that. At some other point, I was like really big on sort of like historical, not fantasy, but like, I don't know, soapy historical stuff. So I watched all of, again, in stuff that didn't come out this year, but all of The White Queen and The White Princess. So I don't know, just different phases of things. How about you?
I didn't watch a ton of stuff this year. All through the summer, I was not consuming a lot of media. I wasn't even reading a lot of books in like April, May, June. I could not. My brain could not. I played a lot of The Sims during those months. Like I just literally poured all of my hours and energy into making other people's lives better. So for that chunk of the year, like nothing. And then when I started to get back into being able to even with media and watching TV, I just wanted to watch procedurals. And it was a really bad time to be watching Copaganda.
Yep.
However, something about like the structure of like one little problem or mystery per episode with a resolution at the end and we move on was like excellent for my brain at that time. It was something that I could watch with the right amount of attention, like still playing a phone game, and I would be okay watching an episode of some procedural. But I'm still me, and I didn't finish anything.
Right.
I watched like a season of iZombie. I watched like 2 seasons of Eureka, and I watched like 7 seasons of Bones. So yeah, I did all of that.
It's interesting how we found ourselves gravitating towards things that maybe we wouldn't have in other times. But like in this moment, it was like, you know what? Really tiny, bite-sized things. The other thing that was different for me this year, longtime listeners of the podcast will know that I am notoriously the one who finishes everything. And when I was putting together this list, there were quite a few things that I started and did not finish. I abandoned several shows this year because I was like, no, we're not doing this anymore for various reasons. Rain, during my like historical kick, I started watching Rain. And then I got to, they were all locked in the castle because of a fucking pandemic. It's like, no, that actually wasn't, that wasn't all of it. It was also just the realization that the kind of soapy that it was not going to be satisfying to me. It was just too angsty. And I was like, I can't, like, you're locked inside because of a disease. And also, like, no one's ever going to be happy. And I just can't. I can't deal with this right now. So I quit that. I also quit Harlots. I got really close to the end too, but I quit it similarly because like something happened, and then I was like, I don't trust where this is going. So I looked it up to see, like I spoiled myself, and I was like, no, I definitely don't like where this is going. So I have refused to finish Harlots. A couple things that came out this year that I was like, no, I am not enjoying this. Outer Banks, The Righteous Gemstones, which was like fine, but I just didn't care. So yeah, quite a few things that I started and actually walked away from because my brain could not.
Okay, this is funny because on the flip side of this, I don't finish anything. TV shows, I'm like notorious for being able to be like, I'm done with this and walk away. I also am probably the person like on the book side of things that like I'll read anything, I don't care. And so I'll get through it. Anything for Snark Squad, I'm into it, whatever, it's fine. But this year I haven't really been that way. I've been putting aside more books than ever. So if you look at like my star ratings on books for the entire year, they're skewed really high. I only gave 1 out of, let's say, 100 books that I read this year. 1 book is a 1-star. Everything else is like 3, 4, and 5 stars. Because if I wasn't enjoying a book, this was not the year that I was going to be like, well, I'll just finish it and review it. No, I was like, no, get thee away from me. So all of my, like, I can't even do a worst of the year video, which I do every year, because there's literally only 1 book that I gave 1 star. And the selection, which I reread. So
yeah,
two
I was
books.
Just about to say, you also did the selection. You got two books. You got two books.
I got two books. Two books. That's my list. Number one and number two.
Number one being Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, just for clarification's sake. And one of the 9 episodes that we did this year was rereading the Hunger Games trilogy to prepare for that book, which also was one of my rare one-star reads of the year as well.
You mentioned before and talking about the episodes that we did on the Hunger Games. I don't know if we ever planned to do an episode on Ballad or if we were just like, oh, we'll reread it. But there were a couple things that are on my list that we were like, we'll do an episode about that.
Yes.
And we never did. Palm Springs, the movie.
Yes. Yep.
Which I actually enjoyed and probably could have spent in a whole episode talking about. The Babysitter's Club.
Oh my God, I forgot to, I did not even add that to my list, but yes, also watched and thoroughly enjoyed that. Would have made for a good episode.
And I don't know if we ever like said we were going to do an episode about this, but I think maybe after watching it, we were like, episode? Never Have I Ever? That was this year as well, correct?
Yes, Never Have I Ever was this year. Warrior Nun was also on our list.
Yes, yes. I didn't watch it, so it's not on my list.
Oh, you didn't watch it? Oh.
I'd never watched it.
It was everything that the trailer promised it would be.
Yes, okay. Like, that's fair.
It delivered on the premise. I think that actually also would have made for a really, really good episode. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe if it gets a second season, we'll watch the first season to prepare for it. I'm not sure. I mean, most of these things, like, we didn't do it. And so it's probably never going to happen. Although Babysitter's Club, we had decided that we weren't going to do an episode on Babysitter's Club because we did that, like, the live that we did on it. We did the live show. Yes. Where we talked about Babysitter's Yes. Club and Big Friendship. And we were like, let's just sort of roll these in. I think because we decided that there wasn't that much to say about Babysitter's Club. Like, we liked it. And
sure. That feels, I mean, I didn't have much to say about anything this year.
Yes,
so
that's true.
Yes, I feel that.
Yes. We have actually recorded one episode that's going up in January of 2021. Fingers crossed. We've already mm-hmm. recorded it, but on mm-hmm. The Queen's Gambit. And I feel like there was a similar sort of vibe of we ultimately did have a lot of things to say, but in trying to think about like, okay, what do I have to say about this? And then it's just brain empty. Like there's nothing there. Just completely.
Yeah.
There is only void.
And I mean, to be fair, a lot of times the space in my brain that I was using to have thoughts about media, I don't know. I was just, you know, surviving, but also being inundated with like news and like
right.
Politics this year. And there was a lot of processing happening, but just in areas where that were non-media. So when it came to media time, I was like, no more, no mm-hmm. more thoughts. Thank you.
Yes. A few other things that I noted as like things that would be good episodes, The Great on Hulu. I don't know if you watched it. I feel like we would have talked about it if you watched it.
I did not, no.
It was a ton of fun. I really, really enjoyed it. I would be curious to try to watch it for this, like for a project like this, just to see if my feelings about it changed at all. Like, this is the other thing too, is because I was not approaching anything with the kind of processing that we generally do in the space of this podcast. There are a lot of things where I'm like, I really don't know if I tried to think about them literally at all, if I applied a third brain cell to any of mm-hmm. these, to mm-hmm. any of these things, would my feelings change? I have no idea, probably, but I think The Great is really, it's, I don't know, it was a lot of fun, visually super interesting. That one would have been a good sort of potential episode. Another thing that we talked about doing again, but never did, don't know if you actually, I think you maybe didn't watch it. Also, whatever about doing the episode, but Little Fires Everywhere.
Yeah, I did not watch it. And I still haven't read the book either. I think that's what's putting me off is that I wanted to get to the book first and I just haven't read the book. I don't know why. There's just like a brain block of not wanting to get there. I think it has something to do with some of the feedback of people being sort of mediocre on both, that it hasn't really, you know, made me want to dive into either. But no, I didn't watch the TV show.
I was kind of meh on the book, but I like I enjoyed the show more than the book, I guess, is all I'll say about that. Oh, another sort of category of thing that I feel like I have more of on here than in years past is different documentary-ish, like on HBO and Netflix. I feel like I watched more of that stuff than I normally do. I really enjoyed McMillions back at like the beginning of the year, which was about the scam to like basically steal the prizes for the McDonald's Monopoly money. Mm-hmm. Yes, I don't know. The structure and the pacing of it was really, really good. I really enjoyed that. I also, on sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, but like a thing that I enjoyed, but in a very different way, was Netflix's Athlete A, which was also really, really good. And then there were a couple like music things, the Blackpink thing on Netflix, more stuff like that made it onto my list of things I consumed this year than in previous years.
I also watched Athlete A, and I also watched the Blackpink documentary. And also, I just read a lot more nonfiction work this year than I ever had. It was my goal from last year to read, I think, like one nonfiction book a month, so 12, which would have doubled how many nonfiction books I'd read from 2019. And I think I ended up reading maybe 20 nonfiction books.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I did a lot better. And a lot of that was through the summer reading a lot of books about anti-racism, but then just finding my stride with nonfiction and being like, this is something I really enjoy, which is weird because everything else I'm talking about, like zero brain cells, comfort, except for nonfiction books, I'm like, yes, tell me everything about redlining in the United States. So that was the one thing that I was going to kind of, I don't know, it's not news, which is great, because I didn't want to watch any more news, but it was still information in a format that I enjoy. And when it's done right, it's got like, you know, I love nonfiction that has more of like a narrative arc. So I was able to consume that a lot better than some of the other more topical things.
Well, and it's also you're spending a lot of time like actually diving into a thing rather than getting the sort of, you know, quick headline in a tweet or whatever. So
right,
I think that
right.
also helps make that experience a lot more palatable. I usually end up reading quite a bit of nonfiction, but this year I started a nonfiction book club with Deboki.
Yay.
And so that was a ton of fun and like sort of guided some of that reading and also led to me reading some stuff that I absolutely would not have read, because our sort of central premise is that we go back and forth picking books, and like the things that I pick tend to be more social science-y and the things that she picks tend to be more hard sciences. And so every single book that she has picked is something that I never would have picked up on my own. So I guess maybe Superior, I think, was the first book that she picked, and that I maybe would have read on my own. But everything else, I never would have picked it up. So, but I really enjoyed most of the books that we have read. They've all been really, really interesting. And like getting to talk to my really smart friend about those things has been really fun. It has also been really helpful because it has created this social space around these books. You know, it is one of my few reliable social activities. Once a month, I'm going to get on a hangout with my friend, and we're going to talk about these nonfiction books that we read. And so like that, I think, has been a very helpful and motivating thing.
Yes, I also started a book club this year. Oh, well, to be clear, some of these on my 20 books, nonfiction books that I read, are for your book club. So thank you. also things I probably would not have read alone, but that was enjoyable in, you know, going through, like you said, in a social aspect and getting to see you guys discuss it. But I also started a book club this year with some BookTube friends, and we just pick a book every month and do a live show to discuss it. And so even in the months like May, April, May, and June, where I wasn't reading anything. I was reading our one book club book. Right. And oftentimes it was like on the day of the show, I was like speed reading through it in order to make it. But I'm so glad that I did, and that we had that, like you said, reliable thing that I was able, mostly I was just like there to talk to my friends. Mm-hmm. But we included a media in there as well, which is, you know, high key our brand. Hello, welcome to a podcast. but yes, I'm so glad that we did that, and we had that space. Like, little did we know in January 2020 how much we would need it. Mm-hmm. Or want it, but you know, it was there right in the nick of time.
Uh-huh.
I guess also branching on from nonfiction, I guess, sort of, is reality TV.
Oh, yes.
Or competition shows, I should say. So I watched Great British Bake Off this year as well, the new season. I was watching some of The Voice. I have not finished the most recent season of The Voice just because I have this thing, we have this thing that we say our favorites on these shows never win.
Yes.
So I was getting a little frustrated at The Voice, and I was like, wait a second, this is no longer fun for me. And I almost made it there with a Great British Bake Off because one of my favorites got voted off. But then the winner of it all was like the youngest contestant, and he was so freaking cute that it ended up being a wonderful experience. Not only did I watch that, the newest season, but I also went back and watched some seasons I had already seen just as comfort media, and that was also really great.
Yeah, I was keeping up with The Voice. It was really interesting at the like beginning of quarantine stuff, because the first season that aired, the first half of this year, they filmed all of the sort of audition and like pre-live rounds before everybody went into lockdown, but like they were airing them at, you know, during during everybody being home and quarantine and stuff. Then they got to the live episodes, and everything was done completely from the contestants' homes, which was interesting. Like, the judges were also at home, and like I assume that a lot of their like local NBC affiliates were helping to facilitate some of the filming, because like there were things in some of their setups that I was like, I don't understand like how exactly this is working. But it was interesting to watch that happen in sort of real time. But then this most recent season that just finished, they like flew people out. I think they did sort of like pre-auditions in different cities, and then they flew a bunch of people out and like put them into isolation and stuff to do the like the TV blind auditions. And then mm-hmm. they just like stayed in this hotel until they got sent home from the show, basically. I also did not finish. I watched everything but the finale because I heard who won the finale, and like it's also like a very young kid, and I could see how that would be like really, really sweet, but I just was so frustrated because I feel like the people who placed fourth and fifth were like leaps and bounds better than 1, 2, 3. And my like actual favorite throughout the season had got sent home the previous week. So I was like, whatever. I don't want to watch this. I'm not interested in watching this finale episode.
So in GBBO, they always have the competition like in a tent in the middle of a countryside. I don't ask me where this is. I'm sorry to anyone who is British who is listening, but I think they had everybody quarantining, like staying there. I think in previous seasons, like you could go home in between episodes. Mm-hmm. And so they would go home and practice for the week and then come back. And then in this season, everybody was just living in the place where they recorded the episodes, and mm-hmm. they would fly in their families for like the final episode. They didn't do that. So there were slight adjustments there as well. And I totally forgot, but hearing you talk about like how reality TV adjusted for 2020, I watched The Bachelorette this season as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they usually go on dates like all over the place, and they go to a different country, they go to each other's hometowns, they meet the family. And so they were stuck in one location the entire time. And even before they started recording, they had to come in, do a COVID test, quarantine for 2 weeks, and then they started recording. And then halfway through, or no, not even halfway through, one, The Bachelorette lasted like 3 episodes and decided she knew who she wanted, and they left, and she left with him, and then they replaced The Bachelorette with somebody new. So it was like a whole thing, a whole season. And it made it even more weird and complicated that they never left this hotel. They never left La Quinta in Palm Springs, ever. So their dates would be like, we're gonna go to the poolside. Like, our date today is by the fountain in the entrance. It was really, really sad in a lot of ways. Very 2020. But I watched all of it.
So, okay, the challenge had sort of two big adjustments to make this year. So the current season had to do like the COVID prep. And from what I understand, they had two departure cities. So you either went to like the show is being shot in, I think, Iceland. And so everybody had to get to either LA or London. And then once they got to LA or London, they had to quarantine in a hotel for 2 weeks. And then they got on a plane and flew to Iceland. And then once they got there, they had to quarantine in a hotel for another 2 weeks. And then they went to the big sort of compound where they're staying. And in past seasons, they always like go out to a bar, kind of in between, you know, challenges and stuff, because it's an MTV reality show. So it's not like there's the competition component, but then it's also, you know, like people being like drunk and ridiculous. But yes, the bar things were always so silly, because it's like they clearly just took over a bar. Like they had to shut down the bar so that the show could film there. And so their solution to that this season is that they, like, the house where they're staying is clearly on a very, very massive piece of property. And so just off of like the sort of main house, they built this dome that looks like, and I apologize to anybody who is not going to catch that, like, understand what I'm describing here, but Mari, it looks like the inside of like the Heineken tent at Coachella. Like, it's this like big dome. It's so wild. And so that's just like, you know, in between like competition things, they have them all in this neon lit dome thing. And I don't know. I wonder how often they were like, I really just want to go to bed. And MTV was like, no, you got to go. You got to go drink in the
dome.
In the dome. In the weird bar dome thing. So that has been super, I don't know, entertaining and interesting to watch. The challenge usually has, like, when they get to the final, they do like a location change. I assume that's not going to happen this season. I don't know. We're not that far into the show, but I can't fathom they will be able to do the location change. So that's this season. They also had, in the season that was airing and kind of that was filmed pre-COVID, but like started airing, I think maybe shortly after, like maybe in March or April. But one of the contestants on this season said a bunch of racist shit, like, on social media while the show was airing, not while it was being filmed. And starting the episode that went up the first week of June, maybe, they did a very aggressive edit to remove her from the show. So wow. We don't see her basically at all until the episode where she gets eliminated. And even that, like, there's this, like, you go before this tribunal that's deciding who they're going to send in, and they show basically nothing of her tribunal. Like, watching the editing, it was like genuinely so impressive to see the lengths that they were going to make sure, like, sort of the wide shots, like before they go into a big competition thing, the host is explaining to them, here's what you're going to do in this thing. Like, they usually do these sort of big wide shots where you can see the whole cast. Those were replaced by like medium shots that are clearly framed, like people on one side of D and people on the other side of D. It was a thing of beauty, honestly, the way in which they cut her out of the show. So that was also really, really interesting in terms of watching reality TV handle 2020. The other reality show, though, that I noticed when I was looking up things that happened this year, and I still don't believe that it was this year, but Google says that it was this year, but The Circle was apparently this year.
That was early pandemic. That was like Tiger King and The Circle were kind of happening around similar times, I think.
My brain is like so convinced that The Circle was last year. My brain is like, I don't, like, that feels wrong. but apparently it was this year.
Yeah.
My favorite thing that I watched this year that we haven't talked about yet, though, that I want to like make sure I get in there is Away on Netflix, which is, it's about this, the first mission, like human mission to Mars. And we follow, I think it's seven astronauts, I don't know, half a dozen-ish, give or take, astronauts who are on this mission from different countries. And there's the American who is also the captain is like the probably the main character, but it's all of them. But we also are watching the people that are left behind on Earth, seeing the way that this is affecting both sides of that dynamic. It was just really, really, really interesting. All of those relationship dynamics were super fascinating. I think that the show is getting another season. I really, really hope so. But I assume it won't be happening anytime soon. But it was, oh, and Succession. I watched Succession this year too. Yeah, that was another one of my binges. I think around the time that the new season came out, I was like, oh, this is a show that people love. So I will watch it now too.
Did you love it?
Yeah, too? I really did. Yes, yes. I really enjoyed it. I mean, like, everybody on that show sucks, but like the show knows that they suck, you know?
Yeah.
And like that makes it watchable.
I think that's it for me in TV, honestly. it was not a good TV year for me at all.
What about movies? Did you watch any movies this year?
I was thinking about this because, you know, not that every movie you ever watch is in a theater, but obviously, theater experiences in this year were different. I had like a membership to AMC that I was paying for monthly, so I could go watch as many movies as I wanted or whatever the set. I don't even remember what the setup was, but obviously, I didn't even have to cancel it. AMC, you know, canceled its own program and was like, we're not taking your money anymore. And the number of movies I watched overall were really down. But interestingly, there were three movies that kind of adapted with the times. So one was Emma, which we talked about, but it was the first movie that I paid $30 to watch in my own home. And that was like right at the beginning of the pandemic.
That's the last movie that I saw in theaters. And I actually saw it twice in theaters. Like I saw it when it came out at the like local AMC. And then I, maybe like a week before we went into lockdown, another friend was going to see it at like the local indie theater. And I went, I like joined my friends to see it there. And so Emma two times was my final theater movie experiences.
I think Birds of Prey was mine. Mm-hmm. I think Birds of Prey was my final movie. And then I put off watching Emma because, you know, me and Deadline. So I was like, oh, I'll just put it off. And then somewhere in that, between putting it off and needing to record the episode, that's when things started to get serious with the lockdown and theaters were shutting down. So I was like, I guess I'll buy it because they did that thing where you could like watch it from home. And I paid $30 to watch it from home. I'm still not over those $30, obviously. So that was one. And then Disney released Mulan through Disney Plus. So also an additional $30, I want to say, that I paid for that. But which was an experience. It was one of those things that I watched it and I was like, yeah, that was fine. And then I went on Twitter and everybody was like, that was awful. And I was like, oh, it was, wasn't it? So that one. And then now we have this whole thing with like HBO Max and mm-hmm. them getting movies directly to HBO Max. So I watched Wonder Woman. That was the most recent movie that I watched this past weekend. And we will eventually talk about that one, I feel mm-hmm. like.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was also, I don't know, I just miss the movie theater so much. And mm-hmm. now I'm watching these movies at home and it's fine, but I really miss it.
Yes. I also really deep in my soul miss going to movie theaters. I haven't seen Wonder Woman yet. I had planned to do it. I wound up watching Bridgerton instead. That I had sort of a similar experience where like I watched it all in one go and then like I got on Twitter and it was like, here are all the problems with it. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. That's true. So that also was like that. I feel like maybe I should have gone with Wonder Woman. The reason that we will probably get to it eventually is because we are planning to do a sort of DC series of episodes similar to what we did for the MCU. I feel like we have to figure out how exactly we're going to break, like, structure that. Like, the MCU stuff was clear because they have their whole phase thing, which made it right. A lot easier for us to decide, like, how to separate out those episodes. The only other movies that I remember watching this year, The Happiest Season, which, like, I understand a lot of people don't like it, and I know why. Harper, the lead, sucks. But also, my bar for movies like that is, like, truly on the floor. So mm-hmm. The fact that this one involved Kristen Stewart and Aubrey Plaza being gay, I was like, whatever, that's fine. Like, I accept. Because I've also seen, I can't begin to name them, but I've watched a ton of Netflix holiday movies in the last month as well. Mm-hmm. I completely forgot that I had done this until, like, thinking about The Happiest Season. I was like, oh yeah, I watched a lot of those too. But, like, those don't stay in my brain. Like, that's the whole point. They wash over me and that's that. So that's, like, that's the expectation that I went into The Happiest Season with. So I had a fine time in a way that a lot of people did not. I also, The Old Guard on Netflix was a ton of fun. The Devil All the Time on Netflix was another thing that I did not finish. Like, I was that also, like, the cast is phenomenal and they can't save it. They can't save what is a bad movie. I don't care what any critics tell you. Fuck that movie. Another, like, really highly regarded movie that I have, like, so many problems with is The Trial of the Chicago 7. The performances are all really great. And it's, like, the most appropriate setting ever for Aaron Sorkin's, like, big speechifying dialogue, because it's, like, a courtroom drama. And so, sure, fine. There's tons of opportunity for characters to give these big impassioned speeches. However, I feel like it's morally vapid as a movie. Like, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character, Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays the prosecutor, and he's the first person that we meet, and he is meant to be almost this audience stand-in type character, which is insane because he's the fucking prosecutor. And, like, they have him kind of, like, they cut to him to have these expressions of, oh, wow, this sure seems, like, bad. Like, this seems unfortunate the way that, like, justice is happening. But he doesn't do anything. Like, he continues to do his job as the prosecutor. And then at the end of the movie, there's this moment where, because the Chicago 7 are ultimately convicted, like, that's spoilers for history, but at the end of the movie, one of them reads out a list of names of people who died in Vietnam, and it's, like, this big sort of contentious moment, and a lot of people who, like, hate the seven sort of storm out of the courtroom in disgust, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like, stands and, like, salutes, and he turns to his spouses, like, what are you doing? And he's like, it's respect for the fallen. And, like, we're meant to believe that this is this big, important, like, you know, good for him kind of moment, but, like, it's nothing. He stands up
and salutes
right. And to make that even worse, though, like, the actual thing, like, the actual reading of names, the motivation behind that wasn't just, like, oh, look at all of the Americans. Like, it was also, like, Vietnamese dead. Like, that was part of what they were protesting. Like, that was part of what they were upset about. Like, I just, like, there are so many layers of so many ways in which Aaron Sorkin took, like, very radical people and watered down their politics.
Yeah.
It was deeply, deeply frustrating. And I haven't had the opportunity to yell about it. So
This is the opportunity
to yell about how upsetting it was. Like, as a movie, I understand why it is so, like, why critics love it. Like, a lot of the performances are fantastic. Sacha Baron Cohen is truly the best part of the whole movie. Like, there are things about it as a movie that are really, really good. But I just, like, the politics of the movie are infuriatingly disappointing. And literally every choice that they make with the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character, who, like, was a like commie hating douchebag, like the way that they tried to turn him into this sympathetic, like there are good people on the other side. Choosing to like push that message on us now, like fuck you, Aaron Sorkin. Like honestly, yeah. Go fuck yourself. I just no. So
I didn't watch this, but I'm so happy you had the opportunity to yell about it. Happy for you.
Yeah, that was really the main thing that I needed to get off my chest. I have nothing else to say. Did you have any particularly strong lowlights of the year that you would now like to yell about?
No. I've been feeling this like ever since I've been doing getting together my wrap up for reading and like seeing how skewed it's been on like the high end of ratings. Mm-hmm. This was such a weird year for me in media consumption and like processing. And part of me is like, am I getting just like more lenient? Like, and I know this is true because even from the beginning of Snark Squad to like how I criticize media now, like it's very different. And I feel like not necessarily that I'm getting more lenient, but that I'm understanding more and more how subjective this all is. Mm-hmm. And how like good and bad, like, I don't know, whatever. We do our best to kind of like pick these things apart. So I don't know if this is like a continuing trend of me being like, yeah, you know, more able to pick apart like this is why I didn't like it but it's still fine as I get older, or how much of it was just me not being able to really process things this year. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the things that I like encountered that in any way, if I found like, no, this isn't for me, this is embarrassing me, happened a lot, this isn't good, this isn't keeping my attention, I just immediately yeeted myself from the experience. So now I'm sitting here and I'm like, there were a couple things, like I said, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes was one that I read to the end literally because it was for a book club, and some like books and things that disappointed me because I had high hopes, things like Axiom Zen by Lindsay Ellis, which I really wanted to love because it's Lindsay Ellis, but just ended up being, you know, fine and sort of a debut novel in all of the senses of it needed better editing and needed some tightening, and there are some boring plot things that happened throughout the middle that I just you know, couldn't really get over, but it was still a fine book. I just was a little let down by it, things like that, but nothing that was like truly, I don't know, like 50 Shades level, or like there's always been like a something like a 50 Shades or a Twilight or like some really terrible experience that I've had throughout the year. We started reading Midnight Sun, but we didn't even finish that. So I'm just sitting here like, I don't know, I quit all that stuff too soon to have really like a low light experience here.
I love that for you.
I know. I kind of like it for me too. I am getting like itchy to read bad stuff now. Like I'm like, no, let's... Let's get back into this, like, I don't know. And not only that, but to be able to pay a little more attention or give a little bit more brain space to the stuff that I'm reading and watching and consuming. So I feel myself like kind of getting back into the swing of it. But 2020 was just about, I don't know, things I could handle, mm-hmm. which ended up being mostly positive experiences.
I could only handle things that I will enjoy.
Yes.
Because it turns out that I don't enjoy literally everything else about my existence right now. So
correct. I think that's why I said like at the beginning that even the why of why we were consuming media had changed some in 2020. I mean, media is always about entertainment in some form, I guess, or education or whatnot, but the why for me changed a lot because sometimes I would be willing to seek that entertainment regardless of if the end product was something I liked or didn't like. But not this year, man. The why was literally give me good, happy feelings because everything else is bad. So the moment that was not true, I was just like, okay, no, then this isn't the one. And I moved on.
Very powerful choice. I respect it. I also, I guess when we were talking about sort of the comforty stuff, I totally didn't even think about the books that I turned to in that way, because there were a couple of those. I reread all of the Crazy Rich Asians books.
Wonderful.
I love them so much. I don't know, man. They do good things for my feelings. I think it's just the escapism of it. I also started reading I got most of the way through the Parasol Protectorate series, because you talk about it a bunch. So I was like, all right, that sounds like a thing that I can do. Sounds like I have the brain cells available for this. Mm-hmm. So couple other things, I guess, that were comfort choices more than anything else.
Yeah, I'm reading my way through like a number of longer series. So one is the Kate Daniels series, which is like urban fantasy, basically like a grown-up Buffy in a paranormal world where like shapeshifters exist. So I think there's 10 books, and I've been reading them since 2018. And when I say I've been reading them, what I mean is that I've reread the first five, like now 3 times. So I reread the first 5 again this year. I did finally read book 6 this year as well, but I just keep reading those first 5 over and over. And then the Mercy Thompson series as well. Like I reread the first 3, and then I finally moved on to 4 and 5. So I have a few series that I just keep rereading the first ones, and then tacking one on at the end, like, I guess I'll read the next one too. So of like the 100 or so books that I've read this year, I'll probably end up a little bit over 100. I think I'll end up with like 25 to 30 books that I reread. So yeah, it was a pretty healthy dose of rereading for me as well, just for that, because I was like, you know what I already know happens in this book, everything. I know everything that happens in this book.
While we are on the subject of books, and since you managed to spare yourself any major lowlights, what were some of your favorite reads of the year?
Yay. Okay, let's see. Something that got some pretty good hype this year that I think is worth all of the hype, Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid, which I read on a plane, one of the last planes that I got on in 2020. Like, I bought the book itself at an airport and read the majority of that book on a plane. So I don't know if that's like part of the reason that I also have some fond memories of reading this, but it is absolutely wonderful. It's so smart and so funny. It has a way of like describing people in situations that I still think about some of the descriptors that she had for people and like their apartments, their spaces, their personalities, the way they move through the world. So I absolutely loved that one a lot. Black Girl Unlimited by Echo Brown was something that was just truly blew me away. It is like a fictionalized version of her life, so partly autobiographical, and it is magical realism. It is super heavy, and there are a ton of content warnings for this, which I would definitely check out if you're interested, but it, I think, is probably the most impressive thing that I read all year and the most emotionally impactful thing that I read all year. I cried a ton this year, sure. FYI. Sure. I pretty much cried at least once a day throughout 2020, but this one was one of the things that made me cry in a good way in terms of like eliciting the emotional experience that the author wanted me to have. But honestly, the moment that I cried the most was at the end of the book, hearing the author read her own acknowledgments and then talking about her life and how it influenced the work, and then like thanking her family and her brothers specifically. Like, I sobbed through like the 5-minute reading of her acknowledgments, just so you know. Not that that's the book, but Clap When You Land by Elizabeth Acevedo came out this year and was also great. A Heart and a Body in the World by Deb Colletti. If Black Girl Unlimited might end up being my number one book, but if not, it's going to be A Heart and a Body in the World by Deb Colletti, which was just also full of content warnings for violence and violence against women and school shootings and things like that, but it was just absolutely excellent. I will also mention the series by Eden Robinson that starts with Son of a Trickster, which was a book that I read it and I was like, that was good. And then a week later, after I actually did think about it, because this was one that like my brain could not stop processing, I was like, actually, I love that. Mm-hmm. And I have like my feelings for it has not stopped growing. And I did read the second book in the series now, Trickster Drift. And the third one comes out in January, which I'm super looking forward to. And the series, the Canadian series based on this work, also is coming to the US next year. So it's something that is like part of my most anticipated for 2021. And I really, really loved the sort of slice of life fantasy that this is, because it does have fantastical elements, but the storytelling portion of it is just like a day in the life of this boy named Jared. And so the balance of that I thought was really neat. Okay, two more. One, Black Sun by Rebecca Roanhorse was really great as well. It is a fantasy that is inspired by sort of pre-Columbus sort of indigenous history, I would say, I guess. And it follows like these different points of view, and it's like counting down to when they're going to intersect. And it was just absolutely thrilling the entire time. Every point of view is worthwhile, and you never, like, while you're in it, you're never thinking, oh, I would rather be hearing about someone else. So you're like, no, I want to stay here. I want to know what's happening. And the last one is When No One Is Watching by Alyssa Cole, which is like, I've heard it compared to Get Out. I haven't seen Get Out, but it's basically like gentrification, but spooky. And it's not really spooky. And it's, so it's not quite a thriller and it's not quite a horror, but it's so smart. It is so freaking smart for everything that it says about gentrification. I cannot say that word. I'm doing my best. Gentrification. And it's just, I like gobbled it up in one day. So it's a really worthwhile read. I had such a good reading year, you guys. Those were all of them.
I mean, probably you could go on a lot longer.
Yes, that is true.
I co-sign on, I have only read like half of the things that you mentioned, but I also really loved Such a Fun Age and Son of a Trickster and Clap When You Land. All three of those things are books that like sat with me for a really, really long time afterwards. And I think like the thing that you're describing with Son of a Trickster is very true of my experience of all three of those books, where like reading things in this year, I don't know like how much of my brain I was really dedicating to the immediate reading experience, but there are some things that like sometime after I finished it, I was still thinking about it. And like that mm-hmm. is, I feel like this year more than in years past, I feel like I want to change star ratings after the fact, like weeks later, yep. you know, like I feel mm-hmm. less confident about any of the star ratings that I gave something as soon as I was done reading.
Yeah. I find myself like I'll have like a gut reaction of like a range. Like, I don't know, this will be between 3 and 4 stars. And then it takes me a while to sort of more slowly process than I have in years past. And then after a week or two, I'm like, okay, no, this is a 3-star. Like I'm better able to make that decision.
Right. Yes. Yes. The only other thing going through my list that also just like lives so strongly in my feelings that I would be sad if I didn't mention it is another thing that I read because you recommended it. But mm-hmm. back at the beginning of the year, Light from Other Stars by Erica Swiler is probably one of my top reads of the year.
It's so weird, but so good. I love it so much.
Even though I read this book in January, it is still the one of the ones that lives the most strongly and most, I don't know, intensely in my feelings.
I think that talking about our year in media, like we cannot wrap this conversation up without giving a huge shout out to TikTok.
Oh my God. Yes.
I talked about how like hours and hours of my life were just like dumped into The Sims over the summer when I was unemployed and had nowhere to go. But also like immediately in pandemic, as TikTok kind of spread, I not even saying like early adopter because TikTok had been around for a while, but I think that there was like a whole like group of us millennials who did not start using TikTok until the pandemic started. Mm-hmm. I was one of those people, and just the hours of my life that I sunk into that app, especially right in March at the beginning, but still now, yes. I still scroll pretty heavily through TikTok, and it has brought me joy. It has given me lots of information and education. I freaking love that app. And I'm so glad that I found it this year, because in a year where I really needed, like we've been talking about, some of that like comfort and some ways to just spend time in a positive way, I think that TikTok really provided that. The algorithm knows me, and not only me, but Nicole so well, because everything I send to her, like half of it is meant for me. I feel like half of it is meant to Nicole, but it also was that, I think, you know, an opportunity for Nicole and I to keep, you know, we share TikToks all the time and we, you know, make little commentary on everything that we're sharing. And so it's just like another way to have feelings about media, the cornerstone of our friendship. So
yes. Little ways to do friendship. TikTok has been very instrumental in that. I also basically really only got like on TikTok, started using it in quarantine along with all of the other, this other wave of millennials. Recently discover from that year in review thing that I apparently downloaded it at the beginning of February. Have no recollection of this. Don't remember anything that I would have watched. I can only assume that it came up in a like a work meeting that somebody started talking about TikTok, and I was like, okay, I'll download that app. And then never opened it until suddenly everyone was like, this is what you need to do right now. You need to get on TikTok. And they were right.
Yes. And it's now like TikTok sounds and TikTok things are now like part of my vernacular and, you know, the sayings that I use and things I sing around the house. So, and like the influence side of it, like the influencer side of it as well, is really interesting, considering like the products that like now launch on TikTok, and like there's like a mascara I really want because I saw it on TikTok, but it's literally sold out everywhere, and the stupid leggings that everybody buys because it makes your ass look great, like I don't know, the capitalism side of it is also really interesting. But anyways, that, and of course in like later half of the year we started playing Among Us, which has also been the most stressful and delightful experience. This stupid little game that is not at all like good to look at is just so much fun because it provides like the social aspect of it as well. So being able to connect with my friends, we play like once a week and we just spend hours and we are talking about murdering each other, but we also like in between are catching up. How are you guys doing? So yeah, I look forward to playing Among Us with my friends now, like all the time. So
It's like a highlight. Also in much the same way that sort of the book club hangouts are, it's that same sort of thing of, this is a reliable source of social interaction, and I look forward to this time that I'm going to hang out with my people. I think that that has also been, I don't know, this is less media-centric, but like, I think that it has been interesting to see how much better my long-distance friendships are doing right now than the friendships that were like really deeply rooted in the idea that we get together and hang out.
Right.
But like the friendships where we only see each other a few times a year anyway, like we have already established how we communicate. Mario mentioned crying almost every day this year, like in our little Discord chat where we are like literally constantly updating each other on the minutia of our lives. That includes a thing that we have started referring to as a cry log. So it'll be like, cry log day 472. I laughed so hard at the historical disclaimer at the front of the White Queen that I started crying.
Yes, it's true. That is a thing you did.
Yep. This is plucked genuinely from the cry log. That has been super interesting. But yeah, I also very much look forward to playing Among Us. I learned to lie this year.
And she's so good at it. She's now the best one.
And I used to be the worst one. Like Jordan, when she started playing with us, Jordan is also a pretty bad liar. But Jordan wasn't playing the first time. And I feel like that first time I was like the worst liar, but gradually I have learned. So anyway,
Put that on your resume.
Yep. I'm an amazing liar now, so.
This is like, I don't even know if I want to say it because it's kind of like a downer.
Whatever.
We just, in thinking about like the media experiences of this year and how things have changed, I think this might have been an entry in the crylog maybe, but we had a moment this year too where we realized, and I think for you it's probably longer than for me, that we didn't get to go to concerts this mm-hmm. year. And it was like the first time in a lot of years for you that you did not get to see like live music. Mm-hmm. And that is probably also true for me. I didn't like look back to see what the streak was, but that absence of like live music, when as soon as you said it, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
and I hope that that is something that we get to experience in 2021, but who freaking knows?
So who knows?
RIP live music. We miss you.
Uh-huh. I miss you so much. You were such a big part of my life for so many years. And now, nothing.
Nothing.
So that sucks.
Yep. And then the biggest downer of them all is that this is also like the first year in a lot of years where I didn't get to see Nicole. So it is very interesting to see the way that like long distance friendships are holding up, because I feel like we had all of these ways of keeping in contact and all of these tools for communication and whatnot. But for like Nicole and I now, it's like, you know, we don't live together. We do keep in contact a lot of different ways, but we also get to see each other a handful of times a year. So for this to be the first year where that didn't happen was also like big, big entry into crylog.
Yep, bad. A repeat entry into the crylog.
To crylog. Correct. Sorry to end it up and down.
Remember how we play Among Us?
Yeah. Okay, let's bring it back around. But then we play Among Us. And it's so much fun.
And you learned to stop reading things you hate.
Yes.
So there's that.
Yeah. I might do it again, though. I'm not going to lie. It was a temporary break.
It was needed because this is all the good things we could think about from this year. That was it, the whole list. Well, on that note, is that yep. it? Okay, well.
That's the note.
That's the note that we're ending this. Thank you for listening to this final 2020 episode of Stark Squad Pod. If you are enjoying this podcast, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/snarkpod. Thank you to everybody who is still doing that, even though we are like the worst at it. To be clear, we literally only use that money to pay hosting fees. So thank you guys for helping us pay some hosting fees. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on StarkPod.com where you can leave a comment about your feelings about any of the things that we discussed or the way that you have been consuming media in 2020, or you can always find us on Twitter at @snark_squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at My Name is Marines.
This podcast is a Snark Squad production. This episode is edited by me, and the music is by Stefan Chin.